I'm Nikki Strong, and this is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Mario Ritter Jr. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
On today's program, you will hear stories from Brian Lynn, Katie Weaver, and Mario Ritter Jr. Later, Jill Robbins presents today's education report. Finally, we continue our national parks journey with a visit to a massive park in Alaska, Wrangell St. Elias. But first,
China's government has proposed a new law that would make it easier to register marriages, but more difficult to get a divorce. China's Ministry of Civil Affairs recently released a new version of the law. The ministry said people will be able to provide their opinions on the proposal through September 11th. The agency said the proposed measure aims to help build a family-friendly society in the country. The new law is being presented as Chinese officials struggle to find ways to get young couples to marry and have children. Official government records showed China's population decreased during the past 2 years. The population dropped by 2.08 million last year and decreased by 850,000 in 2022. The proposed law would establish a 30-day cooling-off period in case either party has second thoughts about a divorce. This would permit individuals to withdraw official divorce requests during this period if they change their minds. The proposed law drew wide attention on social media, Reuters news agency reported. One user of the country's Weibo social media service wrote, "It's easy to get married but hard to divorce. What a stupid rule." The statement drew tens of thousands of likes from other users. The proposed change aims to promote the importance of marriage and family, said Zhang Chuan Bao. He is a professor at the Institute for Population and Development Studies at Jiao Tong University in Xi'an. Zhang spoke to the state-backed Global Times newspaper. The measure is also meant to reduce impulsive divorces, Zhang added. He said it also aims to support social systems and better protect the rights of the parties involved. Official data showed the number of Chinese couples who married in the first half of 2024 fell by 498,000 compared to a year earlier. It marked the lowest marriage numbers since 2013. In China, marriage is generally considered a requirement for having children because of widespread government policies covering families. One policy, for example, requires parents to present proof of marriage before they can register a baby and receive government assistance. Many young Chinese are choosing to stay single or put off getting married because of worries over job security and other economic concerns. I'm Brian Lynn.
In Zimbabwe, increased wildlife activity near people has put children in rural areas at greater risk of animal attacks while walking to school. Officials and some parents hope a campaign to teach children how to identify danger could reduce risks. No deaths have been reported, but student Esther Bote and her friends remain careful. "We usually walk in groups to feel safer," said the 14-year-old. The 5-kilometer walk to school includes travel through thick forests.
Save Valley Conservancy, a private group, and Zimbabwe's Parks Agency run the program for school-age children. It teaches them how to recognize danger signs and how to coexist with wildlife. Many students, like Esther, are now able to identify the footprints of animals and the sounds they make. They also know how to read the direction of the wind and when and where to seek shelter. Dingani Masuku of Save Valley Conservancy said wildlife affects children more than other people. He said children walk to school and often do household jobs like getting water and firewood. Such activity means they are outside often. Masuku said, "That's why we are targeting schools, so that they can know how animals behave, what to do with the animals." He added that the campaign is trying to teach children a sense of ownership, so they don't see the animal as an adversary, but they see it as something beneficial to the community, something which should be respected.
Recently, at Chiambiro Secondary School, a young woman was teaching children about the dangers of wild animals. The 18-year-old recently left school to become part of a group of young woman rangers. "Don't approach an animal. If it's a lion, it's looking for food. That's why it's in the community. It is looking for cheap, easy prey, and you could be the easy prey." Some of the children said they travel up to 15 kilometers to get to school. They said they have to start walking to school before the sun rises, when animals such as hyenas are still awake and active. An official from the National Parks Agency spoke to the children about why wildlife is important to the community. He said wildlife supports the country's tourism industry and leads to job creation, such as the new ranger positions. Alphonse Chimangaisu is the chair of the School Development Committee at the Chiambiro Secondary School. He said parents hope the information campaign will make children safer. Some parents have stopped their children from going to school because they don't know what might happen, he said.
School officials in affected rural areas often must delay the start of the day's classes and end them early. The president of the Amalgamated Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe, Obert Mazurore, said school officials are trying to let children walk to and from school during daylight hours. That is when wild animals are less likely to be around. We have reports of learners who have completely withdrawn from school, fearing for their lives, Mazarore said. He also noted that teachers who live far from schools are increasingly missing work. He said all these problems are making it more difficult for rural learners to get a quality education. Tenashe Ferrawo is a Zimbabwe National Parks and Wildlife Management Authority official. He said wild animals are going into communities for food and water because of dry weather conditions, also called drought. The official said the parks agency is pushing for animal behavior and conservation training at schools around the country. Farawo also said, children teach their parents what they have learned. He said the agency has established environmental clubs at many schools to bring attention to the issue. The official noted that conflicts had gotten worse because of drought. He said the parks agency had received between 3,000 and 4,000 emergency calls from communities battling wildlife in 3 years. In 2018, there were only 900 calls. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Mario Ritter, Jr.
Schools in Haiti are operating without enough chairs, blackboards, and even bathrooms. Violent criminal groups limit basic government services and deepen poverty, while the state education system faces a $23 million deficit. Yasmin Sharif is the executive director of the UN organization Education Cannot Wait. The country needs help, Sharif said during her three-day visit to the Caribbean country in July. Sharif said the organization provided $2.5 million to help nearly 75,000 children in Haiti with money, food, and other programs. And she asked the European Union and other countries, including France and the U.S., to help close the educational deficit. My main concern is security, she said, noting the effect that violence has had on education. Criminal groups, called gangs, killed or injured more than 2,500 people in the first 3 months of the year. Violence has seriously affected life in the capital, Port-au-Prince, and elsewhere. At least 919 schools remain closed in Port-au-Prince and in the central area of Artibonite because of gang violence. The UN says that school closures have affected more than 150,000 students. Education is part of the solution, Sharif said. That would end extreme poverty, extreme violence, and create political stability and create a reliable workforce. Gang violence also has left some 580,000 people homeless across Haiti, with many crowding into temporary shelters or taking over schools, causing them to close. Schools that remain open are increasingly forced to take students from others that have closed. The Jean-Marie Vincent School in central Port-au-Prince, for example, has accepted students from 12 other schools. Charles Lucerno is the head of the Vincent School. He said, "We're not the only ones facing such serious problems." Lucerno said that when classes end for the day, people left homeless by gang violence enter the school and sleep on its ground. Although that creates health problems, Lucerno still lets them stay. He said, "We are human. We cannot throw them out." Williamson Bissant is a 22-year-old high school student who is preparing to take his final exam to graduate. He described the sad state of some schools. A lot of schools are missing benches or chairs. Teachers do not show up on time. The hardest part of this is that there are no bathrooms, he said. Bissant added, "I hope that the generation that comes after me doesn't have to go through the same suffering." Private schools are out of reach for many in Haiti, a country of more than 11 million people. More than 60% of the population earns less than $2 a day. Among those who have been forced to flee their homes is 20-year-old Megan Dumorsi. She would like to study agriculture, but completing her education has been difficult. "The insecurity has had a huge impact on my life," she said, noting that some students have been forced to leave their backpacks behind as they flee gangs. "The state should find a solution for that. We shouldn't be living in a country where our movement is limited." She said her school is only half built and lacks a library, a computer room, a blackboard, and chairs. She does research on her phone when needed. Another blow to Haitian schools came in late 2022. That was the time the U.S. started a program permitting Haitians and people from other countries to enter the country on humanitarian grounds. "A lot of teachers left," said France Erin, an official at the John Marie Vincent School. I'm Jill Robbins.
Jill Robbins is here now to talk more about that education report. Welcome, Jill.
Hi, Ashley.
There were two similar words near the end of that report, impact and blow. Can you explain them a little more?
Sure. One of the students said the insecurity in the country had a huge impact on her life. The noun, impact, can mean either a good effect or a bad effect. In her case, it was a bad effect.
Right. So, for example, a good teacher can also have an impact on you, and that is a positive effect.
On the other hand, we only use the noun blow to talk about negative effects.
As the story said, the immigration law was a blow to Haitian schools because so many teachers left.
Right, and we can use it in a sentence like this. High prices were a blow to the family's budget.
All right, thanks for joining me today, Jill, and thank you for that report.
Thanks for having me, Ashley.
VOA Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. Today, we are visiting a vast and remote park in the state of Alaska. The park is bigger than the country of Switzerland. It is 6 times the size of Yellowstone. In fact, it is the largest national park in America. Its name is Wrangell St. Elias.
not worry if you have not heard of America's biggest national park. Most Americans do not know its name. But Wrangell St. Elias contains some of North America's largest glaciers and volcanoes. It is also home to 9 of the highest mountains in America. The park extends more than 5.3 million hectares. 4 mountain ranges come together here, including the Wrangell Mountains and the St. Elias Mountains. The Wrangell Mountains cover much of the park. They were formed over the last 5 million years from volcanic activity. The St. Elias Mountains stretch into Canada's Yukon Territory. The Chugach Mountains cover the southern part of the park. The Alaskan Mountain Range forms some of the huge park's northern boundary. The mountain landscape is wild. Much of it is also difficult to reach. Private companies offer flight-seeing tours on planes and helicopters. From high above, visitors witness Wrangell St. Elias's beauty.
Rivers and glaciers help tell the story of Wrangell St. Elias National Park. These rivers, with names like Copper, Chitina, Chisana, and Chittistone, come from the park's many glaciers. They wind through land carved out by other huge glaciers long ago. The Copper, the largest river of them all, flows into the Gulf of Alaska. Other rivers take a more dramatic path. The Chittistone River becomes Chittistone Falls, a 91-meter-tall waterfall that drops over a steep wall. Glaciers cover almost 13,000 square kilometers of the park. In the summer months, the park's rivers carry their meltwater. It is filled with tiny pieces of sand, stone, and other materials. A buildup of this sediment forces the rivers to flow through new channels. This causes the river beds to twist and turn. From up above, these rivers can look like braided hair. One of the park's most striking places is the Hubbard Glacier. It is the longest tidewater glacier in North America. A tidewater glacier is one that begins in a mountain valley and flows all the way to a body of water. The Hubbard Glacier is 120 kilometers long and nearly 10 kilometers wide. It begins on the 6,000-meter-tall Mount Logan in Canada's Yukon Territory. It ends in the waters of a place called Disenchantment Bay. Hubbard was named in 1890 after Gardner Hubbard, the first president of the National Geographic Society. The massive glacier is only getting bigger. Unlike most glaciers, Hubbard is thickening and extending. Other glaciers face melting caused by increasing temperatures. But experts say Hubbard reacts in an opposite way to climate change. As the Earth's temperature rises, the area around Wrangell St. Elias gets more snow and rain. Scientists say this snow and rain is what permits the glacier to grow. Sometimes very fast growth causes huge pieces of ice to break apart from the glacier. Scientists call this calving. The ice creates a thunderous sound as it breaks and falls into the water. Hubbard Glacier's size, beauty, and calving activity have made it popular with park visitors. Large boats travel through Disenchantment Bay, taking passengers close to the glacier.
Wrangell St. Elias's system of glaciers and rivers help support animal life in the park. The park's Dall sheep may be the most famous animal residents. Alaska's Dall sheep are the world's northernmost wild sheep population. About 13,000 Dall sheep live within the park's borders. Visitors can look for their white bodies and huge brown horns near rocky mountainsides. Visitors might also see black bears, brown bears, moose, and caribou. Caribou are large North American reindeer with huge, wide antlers. Along the coast, seals and sea lions lie on the ice and splash in the water. Wrangell St. Elias became a national park in 1980. The park's main visitors center is about 300 kilometers east of Anchorage. The long drive to get to the park is an adventure itself. The trip includes roadside views of mountains, glaciers, waterfalls, and lakes. Its distant location makes it one of America's least visited national parks. About 75,000 people visit Wrangell St. Elias each year. By comparison, parks like Yosemite and Yellowstone get about 3 million visitors each year. Visitors can experience the park's pristine nature as well as its historical areas. The Athabascan people lived in the area thousands of years ago. The park includes sites of their villages and hunting areas. The park also has many historical structures and buildings. The National Park Service says the structures represent periods of exploration, mining, and transportation.
One historical place is called Kennicott Milltown. The picturesque town tells a story of westward expansion and discovery. Miners processed nearly $200 million worth of copper at Kennicott Mines between 1911 and 1938. Many of the buildings that remain in the town have been empty for 60 years. Some are in disrepair. The National Park Service works with the local community to restore and preserve them. Some visitors stay at Kennicott during their trip to Wrangell St. Elias. The family-owned Kennicott Glacier Lodge provides beautiful views of the surrounding glacial mountains. It also gives visitors a chance to try exciting outdoor activities like glacier hiking or ice climbing. Some visitors choose to sleep in the wild outdoors. Private campsites are located in many areas of the park. Some visitors set out on long hikes in the park's backcountry area. Whatever way you visit, the immense and untouched beauty of Wrangell St. Elias National Park is guaranteed to awe. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Mario Ritter Jr.